So we turn our minds to this Tara retreat. I picked white Tara. It was going to be green Tara, but I picked white Tara for a number of reasons. And one reason is it is very accessible. And white Tara, I thought would be an excellent, we'd try to find the right word here, balance, if you wish, or counterbalance, or opposite, but not opposite in any way, shape, or form to the white form of Chenrezig, which is normally associated with male, and the white form of Tara associated, of course, with female. And of course, as I'll explain a little bit later, there's no such thing, but at a relative level of cause and conditions, it actually really is important to work with feminine principles and to work with masculine principles. So I feel strongly that males should work a lot with Tara and forms of Tara, which include Vajragini, Prajnaparamita, all kinds of forms of Tara. And females should also work and practice with male embodiments such as Chenrezi or Mahakala or Hayagriva, whatever form that is. That's very important. So there are cause and conditions, which I will speak about. So with the these preliminaries, which not keen on that, I'd like to find another word for preliminary. How about foundation of realization? That might be better to say. Instead of saying preliminaries, I don't think that's actually even the right word there. But the laying down the support for the support and the basis and the highest practices of complete liberation. Now, you may wonder, why is Tara so important that we pick Tara for this two series of teachings? And that is because Tara is so central, like Chenrezig, to the hearts of Tibetans, but Tara is relied on, has been relied on for thousands of years by many males and female great masters as their yidam, as their main practice. And sometimes we think that Tara is a low practice, a Kriya Yoga activity tantra. But actually, Tara comes in all the forms of tantric practice, including transmissions that are, for instance, I know of one from the tradition of Chökyur Lingpa, which is an entire path of liberation from the foundation, the preliminaries, right through the six dharmas of Naropa, right through to rainbow body attainment. So there are extraordinary teachings of Tara through the history of India and Tibet. And as I said, have confidence that many, many great masters such as Atisha, and other great masters have relied on Tara deeply as a means of attainment and a means of protection and removing fear. So Tara is connected with two main histories, whatever you may call it, of her origins. And of course, they speak of a tremendous level of compassion, like a mother would for her children. So one is the story of Yeshedawa, who was a female bodhisattva who got the idea of bodhicitta from the current Buddha at that time, is a long time ago, eons ago. And Yeshedawa, which means moon of primordial wisdom, got it into her mind, unlike many, that as a female, she could become fully awakened, even though she was told you're going to have to get reincarnated as a male to become fully awakened. She said, you know, I don't think that's true. So based on her compassion to not just teach females, to liberate females, but to liberate all beings, and to challenge the authority that you have to be born as a male, which is still going on today in many places, to become fully awakened, she decided to emanate and develop the as an emanation as a woman to inspire women, but also men, to become fully awakened. And she did. She became a fully awakened Buddha, and she now manifests in countless forms to countless sentient beings. The other main story of Chenrezig as an origin story is that Chenrezig, Avalokiteshvara, emanating his manifestations and liberating countless sentient beings throughout the six classes of beings, thought he had finished, thought he was, it was all wrapped up and done, and then discovered it wasn't. Almost like say, yeah, I'm completely enlightened, or I've done this, whatever it is. Then you realize there's all kinds of things popping up that indicate that the job isn't done. And Chenrezig wept with great sadness, as sometimes we do, at the terrible difficulties and suffering of sentient beings. And out of the tears of Chenrezig came, from the left tear, the emanation of white Tara. And from the right eye came emanations of white Tara, and left eye, and the right eye, green Tara. And both the Taras then said to Chenrezig, "We will help you fulfill your wish, your promise to liberate all sentient beings." So you may take that as just a story, but I take that very powerfully, as I've experienced, and maybe some of you have experienced, I'm sure you will or have, is especially in retreat, and sometimes for me out of retreat, is an incredible feeling of tears at the extraordinary level of confusion, suffering, and unnecessary delusion and ill will and greed that is so rampant, not just among human beings, but all sentient beings, and the wish to develop the qualities that would allow much faster, more swift, which is one of the names of Tara, swift, the swift one. So that is one of the meanings of Tara. The swift one is to be able to swiftly liberate beings. And when I see that I can't, and I see that even some great, great masters have not been able to do that, then I wish certainly for me and all sentient beings to have the extraordinary skills of Atara or Chenrezig to inspire and bring beings into the path of liberation. So we have two aspects of Tara, if you wish. I think Dermot there in New Zealand, Dermot, you must be meditating on Vajravrahi, red Tara, to such a degree that there is a aura of red filling your field. It's quite something there. But I can just make out Dermot sitting there somewhere in maybe New Zealand, in outer space, with the radiance of red all about. Hello, Dermot. Greetings. So these two aspects, one is a peaceful aspect, and the other, the green Tara, is all the aspects of the mandala, the 21 aspects of Tara, which correspond to 21 knots, afflictive knots, and 21 clearances or purifications that happen according to the Enigma tradition when at the point of the full realization of Dharmakaya. There's 21 knots of the inner body get released. So the green Tara is the full manifestation of all the qualities one needs to liberate beings, not just peaceful, but the ability to unfold beings, the richness, the golden light, the yellow light of richness and jewels, and all the supports, especially refuge, that one needs to liberate the ability to have power and to hold power with enlightened intent and qualities, and to magnetize and bring beings into the Dharma. And then the green light of Amoghasiddhi to dispel fears and to clear up fears and to clear up things that people consider impossible. So with these are qualities, and there some of them are very wrathful, the one, the tar of war and the tar of bad administrators. They don't call it that. I think they call it tyranny. Yeah, the tar of tyranny. But I sometimes call it the tar of bad administrators. But these aspects are all the aspects that we need to develop, called the qualities, to bring about full, total Buddhahood and the last stages of bodhisattva development into our being. So these are the two, if you wish, creation stories of Tara, but I think they're very meaningful. And I think unless one really hits the mat every once in a while, or hits the floor every once in a while, and sees the utter confusion and the damage that ignorance and hatred and greed and pride and jealousy does to beings, I think one is not really contacting bodhicitta and Tara and Shinrezi that deeply. And then so again, why Tara? Before I come to a reading transmission and a brief practice with you today of the text, why Tara? Well, in the feminine, from the feminine principle, from the relative feminine principle, I'm sure many of you are all familiar with this, but it's good to consider the great qualities of the relative feminine principle. And you may say, well, they're just cultural. People just dismiss them as just cultural. But actually, it doesn't really matter. Cultural, genetic, these qualities of the best qualities of a nurturing, awakened mother is what we also want to develop, whether males or females. And males, you should know that you have female all the way in you. And we know from modern science that there's no true males or no true females. That's finished. We all contain physical qualities and genetics and so on of both male and female in us. Some exhibit more than others, but we can have a full range, and some less, some more. But we want to bring about the finest qualities of the female principles, and especially the principle of nurturing, especially the principle of being able to, and this is very key with Tara, is the hand outstretched in the mudra of charity or generosity of in Sanskrit, dana paramita, generosity paramita, is the ability to give selflessly and totally of oneself. And sometimes I get asked questions of what would be the fastest way to remove fear and anxiety and consternation, all these things. The fastest way, in fact, is through total generosity, intelligent generosity, of understanding causes and conditions, of interdependence. So a Tara, in the manifestation of Tara, of all the Taras, she has an outstretched right hand. In the case of the main form of white Tara, there's many forms of white Tara, countless forms of white Tara, but in the main form of white Tara that we often practice, a Tara has an eye in her hand. She actually has seven eyes. And those seven eyes are discriminative, or if you want, maybe precision intelligence, precision awareness. Let's not use the word maybe discrimination, because I know I've been told by some people it turned them off because of its modern usage. But precision discernment of understanding and knowing causes and conditions, and primordial wisdom, which is free of causes and conditions. So in her hand is the nurturing of really three things, which I want to bring to you today as an offering, because I keep hearing confusion about this. is three things must come together in Dharma, is the study and the understanding of causes and conditions, which leads to the understanding of relative interdependence. And the next one is the three very important principles for awakening is refuge, the four levels of refuge, the precepts, whether you have lay precepts, the 10 precepts, the 8 precepts, the 250 precepts of a full monastic, and so on, and 300 precepts of a female fully ordained being, and then of course the tantric precepts, and these precepts, and of course the bodhisattva vows of both the commitment and the aspiration, the activity of a bodhisattva. So when you put these together, which are absolutely essential for causes and conditions, and for bringing and gathering merit, when you bring this together, you actually have the beginnings of the realization of emptiness. People think that emptiness is somehow separate from interdependence. They think it's separate from vows and commitments. They think it's separate from the five precepts. Jisun Sungon and the Drikung great masters have been absolutely adamant about this point, that you can't separate these out, that the realization of emptiness is the realization of the absolute vitality and importance, it doesn't go away, of refuge, all four levels of refuge, including a relative refuge, number one, including the precepts, whatever precepts you hold. That interdependence is your strength, and it just doesn't go away. Through understanding interdependence, we see that everything is possible, and we also see that by removing links of connections, links of conditioning, that by removing links in our behavior, in our activities, in our speech, in the way we act, and so on, we can affect change. Why? Because cause and conditions is infinite. Because it's infinite of possibilities, it's utterly spacious, luminous, empty. And in that luminosity, of course, is naturally great love. So this is something I want to bring to you today. And somebody asked me recently about this, and I'm going to come to this a little bit later, is how do we actually practice this? And I will come to that. But first of all, back to Tara. So at the relative feminine principle, think two things or contemplate two things. One is a profound nurturing principle. Able, she has fully full breasts, it says in some of the longer texts, full breasts to nurture all sentient beings. And she is the great mother in the reference here is the great womb. And the great womb here is symbolic of being able to give birth to full, complete liberation, able to give birth, not to greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy, but to give birth to clarity. Now, that statement, even though relatively correct, is wrong. But it's a really good principle to hold to, is that the womb can give birth or arisings of either Buddha wisdom and Buddha activity, or when fabricated or corrupted with taints and fears and anxiety, will give rise to greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy. In fact, the womb doesn't work that way. The womb of Tathagata Garbha, that's actually what it means, is the womb of thusness. The womb of thusness is you don't really add qualities, you subtract until the qualities are revealed. So when I was walking down, I noticed on my desk a couple things, and I thought, oh, okay, here to give you an idea is, I don't know if you can see this, but here is a piece of rose quartz from Ontario, from a quarry about 2.5 hours north of the Dharma Center of Canada, where a rose quartz quarry. And here's a piece of rose quartz, and you can see that it doesn't look like much. It looks like a piece of glass, but when it's cut, when you cut it, the intrinsic nature of this piece of rock will produce a very beautiful gem. That's what we're doing. So too with this lump of white material, which is actually moonstone, Indian moonstone, which will cut a very nice gem of rainbow moonstone. And it doesn't look like much. You might just walk over with your boot or your shoe and walk over this little pebble of white material and think, ah, but actually in this white stone, which has rainbow iridescence only when held in the right direction, is the potential for an amazingly beautiful gem. We do the same thing in pottery. We do the same thing in painting. We do all these things, is we're bringing out qualities that are there. And I want to show you, I just walked by this and on my desk when I was upstairs, and just to give you another example of these pebbles. I don't know if you can see these pebbles, but these just looks like gravel. Yeah, I don't know if you can see that, but just looks like gravel, small little bits of gravel. This is a package of sapphires I bought probably 20 years ago because it was on sale from Africa, little sapphires from Africa, which look like just dirt. And in fact, if you have the eyes to see, you will know that these will produce beautiful sapphires and rubies, small, but really beautiful. And I've cut some exquisite small sapphires and rubies out of these gems. So there you go. And actually Laurel's wearing one. There you go. So I believe, maybe not out of that one, but you have others. Yeah, it's Montana. So the principle I'm trying to show you here is that the womb of Tara is the self-existing nature, the expansive nature of Mahamudra, the expansive nature of Dzogchen, great completion. It's already there. And the only thing in the way is fear. So we have Tutare, which means conqueror of terror, conqueror of fear. And I will go into the eight great fears because it's very illustrative. So if you want to know why Tara is famous for both white Tara and green Tara are famous for dissolving away the fears. And the biggest fear in the teaching, the biggest fear that's mentioned, of course, is the fear of liberation, the fear of freedom. So this is why in the tradition of Vajrayana, especially and Mahayana, and you'll see this also in the Hinayana or the schools of Hinayana, but you'll see this, that trust in refuge, trust in the sources of refuge, all the four sources of refuge, is the path. You'll see that right in the Ganshig. You'll see that in Jisun Sungon's Ganshig. Let's see if I don't have the numbers all memorized, but let's see if I can turn to it. And one of these days, it'd be lovely to have all the numbers memorized here. Here we go. Section, just so you know, not just coming from this being, but from one of the greatest masters of Tibet. If you want to look it up in the Ganshig, the soul intent is number six, devotion alone is ascertained as the means to bring about realization. Devotion, trust, confidence. So unless one has confidence in bodhicitta and confidence in full awakening, and then we look to other things for trust. And of course, as it says right there in the preliminaries, happiness, that is, now what they mean by happiness is great bliss, the great bliss of freedom, the great bliss of totality, the great bliss of removing all impediments. If that trust isn't there, then everything else will be looked to for a source of happiness. That's fine. But you also have to have the perspective, the vision, the perspective, the insight, the trust that yes, you can have these relative happinesses, but unless one looks into the womb of Tara, how's that Freud for Freudian? You know, as Freud said, all everybody's trying to get back into the womb of mom. I agree. All beings are trying to get back into the womb of mom. He was absolutely correct, not just sexually, but for psychologically and for liberation, we want to arrive back into the space of the great mother, Vajragini, Tara, Prajnaparamita, it doesn't matter who it is that womb, which is the fabrication, the non-fabrication, is the non-constructed nature of all experience right now. Every second, every millisecond is Tara's nature, is the Mahamudra. So how do we do that? You may say, well, oh, I can't jump there. I can't just look and see the face of Tara, which is the face of Mahamudra, is the great moon, moonbeams, as the title of a very famous Mahamudra text, Moonbeams of Mahamudra. How do we do that? Well, we have to start somewhere. And as Altenbrecht says, you have to accumulate a lot of merit. So I want to teach about that today, because some people say, where do we start, Lama? What do I do? What do I do? You have to understand it all starts with interconnectivity, interdependence, of gathering the right causes and conditions in your life so that things unfold to allow the discovery of the Mahamudra, the discovery of the womb of Tara. So how do you do that? You have to start with refuge and the five precepts. And I will say to you all, because I was asked about that this week, and I said I would give some instructions. One of the people who asked that is away, but right now. But the key is developing a type of mindfulness of recollection, a mindfulness of attentiveness, of slowing down, of doing things that are able to recollect stuckness, fear, and activities that are tainted with greed, hatred, delusion, pride, and jealousy, and to repeat those activities in such a way that you know it's clear. Now, this is known as, in the teaching, as knowing with wisdom what to accept and what to reject. And I'm going to give you some examples. I was asked to give some examples, and I shall do so. So here's a dorje, and here's a bell, a ganta. There's many ways to pick up a bell and a dorje. One could pick up the bell like this, you see, and put it down, or you can also put a dorje down on the table like this. Well, that might happen, and actually the intent of making that sound might be perfect and wake up some people. But you have to feel the greed, the hatred, the delusion, the pride, and jealousy, the five poisons, in the fabric of your body. That's where it shows up, in your speech, in your body. So how do you start? Start with your body manifestation. Because under that manifestation, in that manifestation, is Buddha wisdom, is Tara. It's right there. So how do you change it? You find the best way for the benefit of self and others to place the dorje down for the benefit of the majority of others, with attentiveness, with awareness, with softness, and filled with compassion, love. Now, if you want to wake somebody up, of course, you have that skill and means. You may go like this. Green Tara. Right? So how do you start? You start by the little things, not just the big things. The little things of placing something on a table, the little things of closing a door, the little things of brushing your teeth, the little things of building a deck, the little things of selecting a piece of wood, the little things of writing an email. Oh, I'll just, you know, whip off that email. No, the emails are sounds and mantras of a primordial nature. So try to put Tara into an email. Try to put Tara into a text. Try to put Tara into the lab. Try to put Tara into the kitchen. Try to put Tara into your footsteps. Try to put Tara into your voice, into your manner. And this is learning to take out, to eliminate, to stop, to remove, to purify. I'd rather use that word purify, because purification takes time. Purify the greed, the hatred, the delusion, the pride and jealousy until you see the white, until you see the purity come out, and you can say, my God, that's glorious. My goodness, that's beautiful. My goodness, that's uplifting. My goodness, that's like Dermot over there, full of radiant, red, powerful, shining light. See? It's even coming out of his forehead. So that's how you do it. And how do you gather merit? Because I get asked this all the time. You gather merit in this way by learning to adopt that which is powerful for liberation, tranquility, calm, fierceness, wrath, all these kinds of things. But you know it works. You know it's pure. And you gather these purities, hundreds of thousands, 3,750,000 mantras. You gather these purities around you, within you, so that you become a powerful manifestation of Dharma activity, such as the 100,000 mandala offerings, 100,000 vajrasattvas, 100,000 going for refuge with the full prostration, 100,000 million guru yogas. How do you do it? You have to gather the outer and the inner. They're interdependent. Those are called blessings, mangala. Mangala, blessings. So these practices and daily life practices and retreat practices should be about 24 hours of gathering around you, in you, the finest qualities. When you have the strength, perhaps at a bodhisattva level, but when you have the strength, then you can engage to increase your awakeness and the liberation of others by engaging in difficult activities and bringing beings around you, not being afraid to bring around you destructive elements or difficult places or difficult causes and conditions, because you can then increase your discovery and your realization of emptiness and compassion through difficult circumstances. So I have told the story many times. Story, of course, probably historically correct, is that when Atisha was invited to Tibet, he heard that the Tibetans were very nice people, very, very sweet, kind, compassionate people. And he thought, you know, to increase my realization, I will bring an attendant that's very, very difficult. So he did. He brought an attendant who used to berate him all the time. Lama, or, you know, guru, you're a bad guru, or you don't know what you're doing, or, you know, berating him all the time. But when he got to Tibet, he realized he didn't need that at all. It's a great story. At least I think so. Yeah. So when I get asked about problems with meditation or stability of mind or life situations or these kinds of things, think interdependence. Think the demons out there are manifestations of the demons within. You think, well, they're not my demons. Actually, they're interdependent. Even if you think they're not your demons, you are connected to these beings and to these situations like a mother is toward children. They've all been your mothers. Yeah? So you have to free them. Sometimes you got to walk away. Sometimes you can engage. You have to know when, and this is great, just great wisdom and skill. So the first place it starts is with developing a deep understanding of refuge and a profound study of the precepts. Some people keep asking me, oh yeah, the precepts that important. Yes, they are. The precept to abstain from killing, killing in all levels. Killing at all levels, squashing, killing, destroying. Could be destroying of a piece of wood. It could be how you set down something. You set something down and it's destroyed. You think, how did that happen? Or you butchered something because you weren't paying attention, or you were in a fierce or mad state. So these are things. So you have to watch all those things and realize that the little things, and I learned this from Namdrim Rinpoche. Boy, did he drive this home with me. The littlest things can grow into the biggest mountains in your life. Little tiny things. So you have to watch for the seeds, those seeds. I take the precept to abstain from stealing, even borrowing things that you don't have permission. Taking things that you think, it doesn't matter, but actually it does. Or taking people's energy, or taking people's thoughts and energy and so on. It's very, very deep study. Sucking away the lifeblood of people and so on, and not giving to them. And so you can turn around these to opposites. Take killing and turn killing into birth, beautiful births. Yeah. Instead of destroying the food, make the food a beautiful birth. Instead of making a crummy cup of tea, make the tea an exquisite offering of tea. That's how you do it. If you are eating meat, then every time you eat meat, even if it's very quick, do a silent or a verbal prayer. If you need to do verbal out loud, is do a prayer that transforms that meat into a gift of awakening, a gana chakra for awakening. It can be done just like that. Just look at it, transform it into a wonderful gift for the nutriment and sustenance of beings to awaken. I take the precept to abstain from sexual misconduct. Sexual misconduct means that sexuality without permission, sexuality without freedom of both parties, or it can also mean adultery, but things that cause real harm, cause real perturbation and difficulties. Yeah, and it will. Number four, I take the precept to abstain from lying. Anything, the big one, of course, is a big lie, but all the way down to little fibs. Now, exaggerations for purposes of fun and everything, that's a bit different, but you have to know when. Can be good, or jokes, but or exaggerations to illustrate something. That depends on the culture. But lying is deliberate hiding of the truth, or deliberate twisting of the truth. Or if the mind is so dull, it can't differentiate. And this is pointed out in the text. A mind of dullness and stupidity and what they call ignorance can't distinguish that which is relatively truthful from that which is relatively untruthful. And this is a big problem, is lying. And that can also mean just slander, innuendo, and so on. So one has to be very, very careful with one's words. Number five, I take the precept to abstain from liquor that causes intoxication. He says, any kind of substance that causes you to lose it, causes unclarity, causes the arising of greed, hatred, illusion, pride, jealousy, causes fuzzy mind states that don't allow progress on the path or create harm. And of course, they knew back then, and as we do today, that statistically, alcohol, even though it's a beautiful craft to drink in some ways, right? A beautiful scotch, a beautiful gin, is a lovely drink in moderation. But alcohol out of moderation is such a big killer and does such damage to families and businesses and interdependence to so many people, way worse than heroin or cocaine or marijuana. It's a real scourge on the planet. If you would like to help me, now I'm not necessarily talking to all of you because most of you don't need this, but if you would like to give a gift to me, please. Don't take drugs. It really messes with a nervous system, and it's hard for teachers and practitioners to deal with the after effects of drugs. So please, please, as much as you can, try to stay off, unless it's for medical reasons and you have to, please stay off drugs. And for practice unfolding, it's very difficult. So I was asked this week, where do I start in the path? What do I do? And so on, to gather merit. If you want to start to gather merit, lots of merit, study profoundly. The words of Namjoon Rinpoche to me when he ordained me as a novice ordination. I never forget the words of Namjoon Rinpoche after the ordination. He said, make this a profound study. Don't just follow rule and ritual. Don't just follow I shall not, but dive so deeply into the precepts so you understand the implications to the minute level. Words to these effects, I don't remember exact words, but it was so profound for me. It's like permission. It's like an empowerment. Permission to find out why these precepts are there and what they actually mean at an outer, inner, and secret level, at suchness level. And this is really, so people ask me and I go, start with the precepts, start with refuge. And by gathering refuge and by gathering the precepts to your heart and really working with the precepts, you will see that you'll naturally enter into meditation. You'll naturally develop a calm mind. Because it's all to do with interdependence, and interdependence is all to do with emptiness. Not the other way around. There's all kinds of people today who are getting out of interdependence and causality because they think it's not important and rushing towards non-duality. But the path, as Jitsun Sungon said in the Ganshig, the path is always gradual, even if the experiences are sudden. The entire path of purification, right till Buddhahood, as Ansem Rinpoche said, is a path of purification, gradual purification. And this is the nurture, this is the nutriment of Tara. This is the mother, the great mother. I'm acting like the great mother is, please, would you drink and eat of the five precepts and refuge and the Bodhisattva vow as the very heart essence of great perfection and Mahamudra. If you want a face of Mahamudra, if you want the face of Tara or Chenrezig, then you have to have these three things which provide the basis of interdependent support for the arising of great merit. Buddhas have great merit, have unbelievable merit. They become Buddhas, as the great text and the great master said, they become Buddhas because of countless lifetimes of gathering great causes and conditions. So we can all do that. I look around at these images on the screen of people I've met, and some I know quite well, and others I'd be wonderful to know more. But most of the people I can see there all have great crafting, artistic, and intellectual abilities. Well, you have to do the same thing with the factors of liberation. Bring the 37 factors of awakening around you and in you. Yeah? Don't associate with fools unless you have the strength to do so. And you're on about their liberation. You have the ability. That's where generation completion stage practices come in and learning from a Dharma master. So you will see that Tara, I have no idea what time it is, oh, it's 12:30. You will see that Tara, look at Tara's eyes. Take a tonka of Tara and look at her eyes. They're the unwavering eyes of utter determination, of Mahamudra. They look straight ahead. They don't waver in the face of any kind of phenomena. Very important. You need those eyes. Those eyes are soft, like as it describes in the longer text, like lotus petals, like lotus, beautiful lotus petals, long, long eyes, long eyebrows coming out like this, or eyes, really, actually, literally eye sockets. And that gaze is a gaze of looking directly through phenomenal appearances. Goodness, I just stumbled onto the voice of Margaret Thatcher. It's amazing. But the gaze of looking directly into phenomenal appearances, into the womb of the unborn, into the womb of primordial awareness, into the innate natural condition that is always present. That's why I recommend to all of you and to myself, you can tell that to me too, happy to do it, is 100 times a day or 50 times a day, stop and reflect and look at your mind. Look not at your conditioned mind, look at your unfabricated mind. That is Tara. That's Tara's nature. That's Tara's wisdom. That's Tara's quality. Unfabricated, unconstructed, unconfabulated nature. No fantasy, just stark nature of how it is. So in our process of awakening, we want to study the finest qualities of awakeness, which is Tara, and gather those into our being and into our lives. So don't worry about stereotypes. If the stereotype works, use it. Look at Tara. Let me just look at the tonkas of Tara in the iconography. Who is it? She's a young 16-year-old woman who is wearing the jewels and regalia of nobility or a queen, basically, of ancient India. Does it fit today? Yes and no. You have to translate it. What is that? What is the finest regalia that you could possibly bring onto you and wear? Sure, you may not wear the kinds of things that she does, but actually, if you look at the symbolism, it's really profound. Okay, so I'm just going to turn there. You may say, well, why would she wear these things? And why is she 16 years old, usually in the text? Why 16 years? Some of you out there don't look like 16 years anymore. But what is 16 years? 16 years is youthful in mind. Youthful in mind that is so youthful that it brings about the nourishment of beings. It brings about the liberation of beings. It's fresh. And what 16-year-olds mean, you can give birth to awakening. You don't have to be 16 years old. You can be 65. You can be 70. You can be 80. You can be 90. You can be 10 years old. The principle here is that you have an opportunity for fresh liberation and awakeness for all sentient beings. This means you give birth to awakeness and birth, not birth to oldness. So she is said to have 8 jeweled ornaments. And these also correspond, if you wish, roughly to the 8 great fears. She has jewels of the crown, the crown ornament. I'll just give these out. If you want to write them down, it's okay. But the crown, the earrings, a short necklace, armlets, 2 long necklaces, bracelets, anklets, and rings. So she's bedecked like a princess. or a queen, but a princess in ancient India. But they have inner meaning. Of course, the crown means that the crown ornament means that one has stabilized the great wheel of bliss. Yeah. That this is not being not just sexual, but given over for little blissful things, but you're able to hold this wheel of energy so that you can allow a great bliss to rain down and great bliss to flood out. So this is a very important principle of bodhicitta. And her earrings. This is from an old text. I don't know which commentary I got from, but stopping denigrating the lama. You can see that denigrating the lama is a wonderful long-standing theme throughout Tantra, throughout the history of India and Tibet. So her earrings on the inner level means that you stop denigrating the lama. The shoulder ornaments and the bracelets and the anklets symbolize abandonment of killing or squashing. Squashing the good, squashing bodhicitta. The necklace, not forgetting the mantra of protection, not forgetting to use excellent speech and to emanate a great speech, and not to forget that all sounds and words are powerful. They're meaningful. The kinds of words that we use are absolutely essential. I would dearly love to have, if you'd like to know a goal of mine and a wish of mine, I would love to have full Buddha speech. I would love to have the 60 tones of Manjusri all the time. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Could you imagine? Wouldn't that be fantastic? I'd like all of us to have that. It'd be fantastic. So, concepts, the use of concepts is to do with the precepts. The use of speech is everything to do with refuge, precepts, and bodhisattva commitments. We need to see that our speech and our inner speech is dealing with either the positives and beatific and transcendental, or it is destructive. We need to see that cause and effect. The belt, Tara's beautiful golden belt, and sometimes a rainbow belt, but usually golden, is the binding of the mudra of bliss emptiness. That is the tigli, the essence, the bomb syllable, the fire in the navel and in the secret center, binding that, learning to bring that and permeate through all the channels. Her skirt is to cover her lower body, which really means to cover that which is base, to cover that which is not just sexual, but to cover that which is just rampantly base, rampantly unwholesome, rampantly greedy, rampantly desirous, rampantly wanting. Yeah. And all she wears, that is her full regalia, her whole being, is the clarity of the channels, the winds, and the drops, or the essences. So that's what it symbolizes. As Namjoon Pashu used to say, the silks and the cloths represent the blissful jhana states and the rupa and arupa jhana states. So by having her regalia surrounding you, it's a direct connection to the removing of fears. She is a princess. She is an empress. I prefer empress. She's the empress on the throne, and she's magnificent, and she's totally nurturing. But in the form, of course, of the 21 Taras, she can also be very fierce in terms of what she, of removing suffering states. So we have the word Tara, T-A-R-A, long A, which is she's quick. Tara's fast, she's not slow. She's not dull in any way at all. She's the full moon bathing your room, bathing everywhere with a clear light of luminous awareness. And she's fast. Yeah. Don't be scared of moving quickly and doing things quickly, but do them without greed, hatred, delusion, pride, jealousy. Okay. Tutare, T-U-T-T, long A-R-E, T-U-T-T, long A-R-E in Sanskrit. Tutare, the remover of terror, the remover of fear. The only thing in the way of full liberation or even partial liberation is fear of freedom, fear of total love, fear of complete generosity, fear of the paramis. That's it. Just fear. Paralysis. It's one of the wonderful definitions of the word neurosis in psychoanalytic terms is a paralyzed being. It's when you get paralyzed, you're being neurotic, and being neurotic means you're filled with some type of fear or anxiety, and therefore you'll defend against it. And of course, we all know that we defend against anxiety with subtle or strong means. And as Namjoon Rinpoche used to say, Canadians are other beings too, of course, not just Canadians, but Canadians are famous for their defense mechanism against anxiety using passive aggressive means. I wouldn't limit that just to Canadians, but something he used to point out a lot. And then we have Ture, T long U R E, Ture, which is the granter of all aims, her outstretched hand and her hand to the heart, which is a blessing mudra. So it's a blessing mudra, holding the Uppala flower, the full blossoming of liberation. She's holding it as a blessing of refuge. Take refuge and you will feel the full unfolding. So when you look up the word Tara in the Sanskrit dictionary, you see the meanings. She is one who can carry across the ocean of samsara. She is a savior. She's a protector. She's a high note. Isn't that lovely? In the dictionary, Tara means high note, shrill, loud, shining. These are the qualities you want to feel. Radiant, clean, clear, goodness, excellence, well-favored, clearness, transparency of a pearl. It's good to have these lists. And when you're meditating, put the list in front of you and say, can I bring these qualities into my mind stream? Can I actually feel these qualities? Where is the transparency? Where is the cleanness? Where's the radiancy? Where's the goodness? Have I reached a high note today? And also you see with Tara is the root tree, which is to sail, literally sail across, to float, to swim, to get through, to attain an end or an aim, to overcome, to subdue, to rescue, to save, to liberate from. I'm going quite quickly, but I'll just repeat that. These are qualities you should write down and put in front of you when you're practicing. To sail across, to float, to swim, to get through, to attain an end or an aim, to surpass, to overcome, to subdue, to rescue, to save and liberate. I'll give you a reference to Monier Williams Sanskrit Dictionary, page 454. That will help you. 454. It'd be good. Go look it up. Great. Go to it. Go to the dictionary, look it up, and look at her qualities. Put them right in front of you. So, you know, I would say that the most common question I get asked as a teacher over the years, which is, seems to be the most mysterious question, not how do I meditate? That, yeah, that's number one. That's kind of a big one. But is what is the word, what's the meaning of the word merit, punya? Yeah, and that's in the long mantra that you have here, in the long life mantra in your text that, that's been given out. The text written by Oregon Newton Dorje, 19th century, great saint. That in that long life mantra is the word punya, right? Is jnana. It's a little different spelling in Tibetan, but jnana, primordial wisdom, strength, power, merit. And of course you can put in front too, the power and merit of primordial wisdom. What is merit? Merit is gathering all the good qualities of cause and effect into your being, interdependence, married with the special insight of discovering and unfolding, discovering and getting used to, that's a better word, getting used to, familiar with the unfabricated nature of mind. And a bit more about the symbolism. The flower, so the right hand is held in the gesture of complete, total, transcendent generosity. And on the left side, up to her left ear, is a full lotus. That's the Utpala lotus. And that word Utpala, are qualities, again, write them out, put them in front of you when you practice meditation or when you move out in the day, is literally means to move, quick mover, not slow mover, quick mover, get to it. And pa or pe is to burst open. And it literally means, utpala means the blossom of the lotus, the blossoming of the lotus, the awakening of the lotus. And of course, the lotus by the left ear means infinite continuum of awakeness. You're hearing with your left ear, you're always hearing awakeness no matter what form it's in. You're hearing the sounds of Buddha nature. You're hearing the ringing of the bells of Dakas and Dakinis. You're hearing the dance of liberation. Everywhere you turn is freedom. It's just hidden by cognition. That's discovery. If I may introduce you to it, discovery is that all cognition is the conditioned mind. Everything you see, hear, discuss, talk about, interact with is completely filtered through the conditioned mind. Tara is pure appearance of the unconditioned mind. She'll arise. She'll arise before you, to your mind, like a mirage in space, fully endowed with all those qualities when one gives up, when one unbinds the conditioned cognition, of course. So listening, and everything is a note of either a cry for freedom from sentient beings. Every action, every email, every text, every footfall, every food, every offering, everything that happens is literally a cry, a yearning for freedom for Buddhahood, like your children, you know, crying because they're in pain and you must help them or leave them alone. That can also be help. But helping them with medicine, helping them with solutions to their problems, you know, and or the sounds of liberation, the tinkling bells, the of the damaru and the bell liberation, the declaration of liberation. It's all there. It just depends on cognition. So every time you hear an utterance or a sound, it's either the wishing for liberate manifestation of the wishing for liberation, even twisted, weird, twisted, crazy, awful, destructive, terrible, egomaniacal, whatever it is, or the beautiful music of transcendent paramitas. I think I've given it lots. So I said I'm going to list the eight fears and probably come back to them tomorrow. The eight fears, elephants are blindness. You can look them up. They're very available. They're really available on the internet, but elephants is blindness. And I want to start with that one. I might not even get past that at the moment, but elephants blindness. This is because it is said in many texts, especially Mahayana texts, that the worst affliction, especially Bodhisattva texts, Shantideva and so on, the worst affliction is anger. But, you know, it's very interesting. In the Gonchig, he was, Jisun Sungon was taken to task for many things he said. But Jisun Sungon said, no, it's not anger. Anger is not the worst affliction. Ignorance of cause and effect, of lack of interdependence, is the affliction. It is the affliction. It's the root, not actually anger. So this is incorrect. If you want to look that up, section 3 of the Gonchig, of Jisun Sungon's Gonchig, number 18 or 3.18. One other text has 3.17. But not knowing ignorance is heavier than other faults. Isn't that interesting? And the commentary to that line by his principal student, especially not knowing through ignorance is explained as a great fault, because the root of all faults is ignorance itself. Deluded in relation to cause and effect, to what is to be abandoned and its antidotes, one behaves without care. Not knowing virtue and negativity, one spontaneously engages in all kalashas or unwholesomes or all mind states without concern. Therefore, one constantly purchases the three lower realms. The land is filled with fools like these. So please don't take that lightly, but don't take it too despairingly. Is our goal, our real wisdom, besides primordial wisdom, is to know what causes suffering and to recognize that we need to purify ignorance. So that is the blindness of, if you wish, that is symbolized by elephants. And I'll spend more time on that tomorrow, but lion's pride, fire, anger, poisonous snakes, jealousy, thieves, erroneous philosophy, imprisonment, greed, water, desire, and attachment, and demons, doubts. You can look those up and realize that that's really what Tara is freeing, all those kinds of qualities. Well, there's lots to it. So before we take a pause, I would just like to go through the mantra a little bit that you have in your, I'll give a pause and I'll give a reading transmission. We'll do some practice together. We're going to practice both this long mantra of longevity and deathlessness, very profound. And also, if you wish to get used to this, I'd like to also have you practice as you feel like. Maybe the main practice, Om Tari Tatari Tu Re Soha. So here you see in the long mantra, Om Tari Tatari Tu Re Mama, the common mantra, the more commonly used mantra. These are both commonly used, but the more commonly used mantra is Om Tari Tatari Tu Re Soha. So instead of Mama, it ends with Soha or Swaha at the end there. And then many Tara mantras, they place a different meaning or a different quality after mama or into the Tara mantra to bring out the different qualities of Tara. But you'll see here, just to go briefly over this, is Ayu, which is long life, Jnana or Jnana, which is primordial wisdom, to know with utter clarity. Then you have Punye, which is Punya, Punye in the mantra, but really is Punya in Sanskrit or Punya in Pali, which is merit. And then you have this joint word is Pushtam Kuru. Pushtam is increase. Pushtam is blossoming, is flowering, is spreading, is everything good. Increase, that's really it, gold. And Kuru is make it so, is activity. It's making increase, make it now, do it. And then with blessings. So this gives you a feeling of the longevity, healing, and primordial wisdom mantra. So these are two. So we're going to take a 5 or 6 minute break. I'll give a reading transmission of the text, and then we'll conclude with a dedication, aspiration, and long life prayers. So let's take a 5 minute stretch and come back.